with me, Thomas the Rhymer. Ah, I love this stuff. This is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored, non-commercial, Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. The program is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. We are in the final throes of the fall marathon, a fall fundraising drive for the station. And we have managed to raise $300 this morning, and I'm very grateful for that, although we must say $200 came from a single source. Thank you very much. But nevertheless, it's something. And we can still do a little bit more. Now, I'm talking now, Thomas the Rhymer is a good song to go out with. And of course, we're going to have our outro song. And I wanted to tell you what it is that we played. I don't have a proper playlist, but thanks to the software I've been using, I can actually backtrack and figure out what it was that you heard. And since we've been getting a couple of calls asking these questions, I thought I would tell you, well, a lot of what you've been hearing is one band, Steel Eye Span, Steeleye, new word, Span, in as in there was a man named John Span, and he had a steel eye. So they called him Steel Eye Span, pity poor old Steel Eye Span. I don't know why, he was a miser. He's one of the 1%, but there you go. So, that set, after the Hour of the Wolf trailer, we heard 700 Elves from Steel Eye Span from their album Original Masters. Then Sandy Denny from, this was a demo version of her song After Halloween. Sandy Denny, of course, from the original Fairport Convention. But that was an album called A Box Full of Treasures, which is a 5-CD set of her works. Then we heard Long Lankin, that long 8-minute song. And Long Lankin, there are a lot of nasty, nasty stories about Long Lankin. And he predates vampires, and there's a similar thing. This is a guy who has to be invited in to get in, and then he will basically, well, eat your children, suck their blood, and all that. Then we heard an instrumental from Lorena McKinnitt called Sacred Shabbat from her album A Mediterranean Odyssey. And then back to Steel Eye Span with The Boys of Bedlam from one of their many best of albums called Portfolio. Then we actually had a request, and I was actually semi-able to fulfill it. A strange piece from the legendary Pink Dots called Casting the Runes. They actually asked for a title that, as far as I could tell, is an album name, and I couldn't find a song by that name. So I chose the song Casting the Runes because that sounded Halloween-y enough. Following that, The Boys of Bedlam, Steel Eye Span, again from the album Portfolio. Oh, I have it the wrong way around. It went from that to the other. After them, Oingo Boingo, with the classic all-time No One Lives Forever Before, Danny Elfman became the soundtrack king, including the best Halloween songs from Nightmare Before Christmas. But of course, the lyrics in No One Lives Forever, let's have a party, there's a full moon in the sky, it's the Hour of the Wolf, and I don't want to die. So that has to get played. And then one of my favorite all-time Steel Eye Span songs, Thomas the Rhymer, which is again one of the child ballads, one of the classic songs of theirs. And they end a lot of their sets with that. They are due. I got an email from that indicated that they should be coming to the U.S. soon, and if so, they would probably be at the B.B. King Blues Club. But you can find out much more about Steel Eye Span. Go to Park Records, P-A-R-K. And at this point, there are probably just two albums that you need, and they're basically the first 20 years between those two albums, and that covers those two collections cover about 14 albums, and that's much of their best material. So, and then there are ancillary albums, and a lot of them, like Maddie Pryor, has three or four bands on her own. And we will go out. We will end the program this morning with another song from Steel Ice Band, and it is the song that has been the outro of this program since 1980. It is Sails of Silver, and from the album Sails of Silver. It's one of my favorite albums of theirs. And, well, you'll be hearing it in about 30 seconds. So let me say to you, happy Samhain. Thank you for listening. This has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. I will be here on recording next week, and I am going to read you a ghost story by Theodore Sturgeon entitled Shuttlebop. And I think you will find it a fitting end to Samhain, which is what it will be next week at 1:30 in the morning. So, enjoy. I'll be, by the way, at the World Fantasy Convention, which is why I won't be here. So, stay tuned, and thanks again. Good morning. Here's Steel Ice Band. I do want to thank the volunteers and the tally who are here taking your calls, assuming that you called. That includes Floyd and Michael and Kenita. Thank you all for volunteering for WBAI, and hey, you can still call the pledge. See you next week.
My name is Dan Ingram, and I'm a WBAI fan. They've always been, you know, the station that kicked butt and the station that said what you're not supposed to say because the people in power don't want to hear it, and I love that.
I have to celebrate you, baby.
I'm Harry Allen. This is Nonfiction. On this Fun Drive edition of Nonfiction, do you need to be a better communicator? Do you need more influence with your boss, your spouse, or your children? Do you desire to truly be a leader? Today, we're going to introduce you to the greatest power you can possess to achieve these goals. Today, we're going to show you how to take hold of the power in story. The story begins now, and it's all on this edition of Nonfiction.
Out in the West Texas town of El Paso, I fell in love with a Mexican girl. Nighttime would find me in Rose's Cantina, music would play and Felina would whirl. Blacker than night were the eyes of Felina, wicked and evil while casting a spell. My love was deep for this Mexican maiden, I was in love but in vain I could tell. One night a wild young cowboy came in, wild as the West Texas wind. Dashing and daring, a drink he was sharing with wicked Felina, the girl that I love. So in anger I challenged his right for the love of this maiden, down went his hand for the gun that he wore. My challenge was answered in less than a heartbeat. A handsome young stranger lay dead on the floor. Just for a moment I stood there in silence, shocked by the foul evil deed I had done. Many thoughts raced through my mind as I stood there. I had but one chance and that was to run. Out through the back door of Roses I ran, out where the horses were tied. I caught a good one, it looked like it could run, up on its back and away I did ride. Just as fast as I could from the West Texas town of El Paso, out to the badlands of New Mexico. Back in El Paso, my life would be worthless. Everything's gone in life, nothing is left. It's been so long since I've seen the young maid. My love is stronger than my fear of death. I saddled up and away I did go, riding alone in the dark. Nothing's worse than this pain in my heart. And at last here I am on the hill overlooking El Paso. I can see Rose's Cantina below. My love is strong and it pushes me onward. Down off the hill to Felina I go. Off to my right I see five mounted cowboys, off to my left right a dozen or more. Shouting and shooting, I can't let them catch me, I have to make it to Rose's back door. Something is dreadfully wrong, for I feel a deep burning pain in my soul. Getting weary, unable to ride. But my love for the leader is strong, and I rise where I fall. Though I am weary, I can't stop to rest. I see the white puff of smoke from the rifle. I feel the bullet go deep in my chest.
From out of nowhere, Felina has found me, kissing my cheek as she kneels by my side. Cradled by two loving arms that I'll die for, one little kiss and Felina goodbye.
greetings and welcome to this special Fun Drive edition of Nonfiction. And opening today's program, we just heard a true classic produced by Don Law and featuring vocalist Bobby Sykes and Jim Glazer of the Glazer Brothers. That's Marty Robbins from his 1959 Columbia Records LP, Gunfighter Ballads and Trail Songs. And it's called, as if you didn't know, El Paso. Again, truly a classic. It won the Grammy Award for Best Country and Western Recording in 1961. And AllMusic.com called Marty Robbins' album the single most influential album of Western songs in post-World War II American music. And to a great extent, because of that record, El Paso, it's Marty Robbins' most popular song. And even if you don't know Marty Robbins or know that album, you probably have heard that tune somewhere. It certainly feels familiar. Well, it's a fitting start for today's program because of who we're about to meet, what she does, and what our premium during the next 2 hours will be for this fundraising edition of Nonfiction. Our guest is Lisa Cron. Lisa Cron is an instructor in the UCLA Extension Writers Program. Ms. Cron has been a consultant, agent, and story analyst for the Angela Rinaldi Literary Agency, the William Morris Agency, Warner Brothers, Miramax, and Village Roadshow. She spent a decade working in publishing as an editor and publicist at W.W. Norton and John Muir Publications. We want to welcome her right now to Nonfiction and to WBAI. Lisa Cron, welcome to Nonfiction and to WBAI.
Thank you, Harry. It is a pleasure to be here.
And Lisa is the creator of Today's Premium. Today's Premium is her brand new book, Wired for Story, the writer's guide to using brain science to hook readers from the very first sentence. Wired for Story. Wired for Story is an amazing book. It not only tells how and why stories work in human culture, but shows how the principles of story line up with what our brains are actually seeking and how they see the world. Right, Lisa?
Exactly correct. I could not have said it better myself, Harry. That's wonderful.
And we're going to be offering this book to you, our faithful WBAI listeners, with some extras. If you pledge $85, we will send you a copy of Wired for Story for your, I was going to say perusal, but a better word would be for your feasting, because it is full and rich. It is, you will be fully stuffed just after reading the introduction. It's an amazing, amazing book. And if you pledge $125, we're going to send you Wired for Story plus a conversation that I recorded with Lisa Cron. Now, actually, we recorded two, so I'm going to tell you about them. One is called What is Story? It's a CD. It's about 40 minutes long, and Lisa and I are talking about this very subject. What is story? You think you know what a story is until you have to sit down and write one. Who said that, Lisa?
That was Flannery O'Connor.
Flannery O'Connor. It's a very famous saying by his.
It is.
You think you know what a story is until you have to sit down and write one. So it's important to start with story. What is story? And Lisa and I talk about this for about 40 minutes. Then we really get into it with a second CD called 12 Paths to a Wired Brain. And that's Lisa and I talking for about 75 minutes, and we go through each chapter of her book, Wired for Story. Now, you can get either CD with a pledge of $50, but you can get one with the book for a pledge of $125, or you can get the entire shebang. That's what we call it, the entire shebang.
I love two shebang.
Not as much as clobber, though. That's your favorite word.
There you
right?
go. Clobber is my favorite word.
Now, you get the whole clobber, the book, and two CDs for $165. So that's an incredible package. Now, I have to admit that, first of all, I'm really thrilled, as you might tell by my voice, by the fact that we're talking about Wired for Story. I think this book is possibly the most important personal development guide we've ever offered, certainly on Nonfiction and maybe even at WBAI. And I'm going to tell my audience why in just a little bit. But first, before we get into that, Lisa, I want to go back to our opening song by Marty Robbins, El Paso. Now, I told you that the way we start Nonfiction is we play our theme and then we play a song usually. And this time I wanted to play a song that emphasized story. And I made some suggestions to you, but you came back with the story, with the song El Paso. Tell me why, and tell me what it is that moves you in terms of story about that song.
First of all, I've just always loved that song. I'm still crying from hearing you play it in the beginning, because it is a perfect story, because it really does put us in the skin of that unnamed cowboy as he goes through the end of his life, really, and makes a choice that means more to him than life itself. And when you think about it in terms of story, that's what we're always looking for. We're looking for, what would it feel like? What would it cost me to be in that situation? And that's what that story takes us. Are we willing to die for love? What would that feel like? And that's where that takes us. And it takes us through every step of the journey. And we feel what he's feeling, which is why I always end up crying at the end.
Now, you know, you say we feel what he's feeling, and he does it through every step of the journey. You're saying that there's certain mechanisms and places in this story. It's a very carefully told narrative.
It is.
And tell me what you mean in terms of, you say it's perfect. Tell me what you mean. What are the details of this?
Well, in a story, I mean, just to talk about, if I could define story for 1 second first.
Sure.
Which is, a story is how what happens affects someone in pursuit of a difficult goal and how they change as a result. And that is exactly what happens here. We have our main character, who's the cowboy, and we know what he wants. He wants this girl, and as it goes through, what he thinks of her and what he thinks is going on and what he thinks is important to him changes, so that we're in his skin all the way through. And the beauty of the song is it starts out, I mean, you need to start a story by letting us know who's it about, what's happening, and what's at stake. And you also want to ground us a bit in where we are so we can see it. And if you look at that opening stanza, it's, you know, out in the West Texas town of El Paso, I fell in love with a Mexican girl. Nighttime would find me at Rose's Cantina. Music would play, and Felina would whirl. You can close your eyes, and you can see that.
You can feel it, too.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, everything that we're seeing physically, we're not just looking at something. He didn't just describe a painting. We know what this means to him. We know he really loves her. There he is. And, of course, we're wondering, I fell in love with her, and we're thinking, gee, does she like him? You know, they say that all story can be summed up with one line, which is, all is not as it seems. And right there we go, okay, wait, what's going on? And the next stanza gives us that, blacker than night, where the eyes of Felina, wicked and evil, while casting a spell. My love was deep for this Mexican maiden. I was in love, but in vain I could tell. Okay, so now there's the story question. What's he going to do? Is he going to get her? What's going to happen? We want to go forward to find out, and we're in his skin as he does it. And each thing that then happens in the story is driven by his desire to win Felina, because then the young cowboy comes in, and now his jealousy comes up, and he turns around, and he, you know, and the wicked cowboy, no, she's wicked, there's the cowboy, and he ends up shooting in that kind of height of, because we're thinking, what would it cost us emotionally to be in a situation like that? Well, first he makes this big mistake. He turns around and he shoots this cowboy. Now he's in over his head. He didn't mean to do it, but he's done it, and now off he goes. And again, we are in his skin as he runs away, and now he's got this, not only the moral thing of, oh my God, I've killed this guy, but he's going to escape, and he can escape. That's what happens next. It's driving him forward. He finds the horse. He goes, because that's what we do, right? I mean, these guys are going to come get us. Off we go.
Got to get out of here.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that we're in his skin. It's not just, oh, I have to escape, but it's, okay, I'm going, and now we're watching him weigh that. But wait a minute. If I get back to El Paso, now nothing's going to mean anything to me anymore. Now I realize that if she's gone, my life is worthless. And he says, he goes, back in El Paso, my life would be worthless. Everything's gone in life. Nothing is left. It's been so long since I've seen that young maiden. My love is stronger than my fear of death. So, I mean, that's the question. It's kind of a Romeo and Juliet type question. You know, what are you willing to do? So back he goes. And again, we're in his skin as he saddles up. He rides back. A bullet's finding him. He's still going. And we're thinking, well, is this really worth it? Is this really worth it?
I love the detail of how when he goes back, he counts the cowboys who are out there to get them. He numbers them. Like, he's really seeing all of this.
I know. It's like 12 on one side, 5 on the other.
Yeah.
And so we know what's at stake. And it's not just, oh, where the bad guy's going to get him, but we understand that he pretty much knows that he's not, you know, there's no getting out of this one alive, but he's still going to go. He gets shot once and he feels it. He's still going to go. So we're like rooting for him, aren't we? It's like, please get there. And then we get, I think, the really biggest and most wonderful turn in the story, because he said what? Felina's wicked, Felina's awful. He's still willing to do it. It doesn't matter. He loves her so much, he's going to go anyway. But when he gets there, and he's got to make it to Rose's back door, and he gets there, and out she comes. Out she comes, and she cradles him in her arms, and she kisses him. And it makes you feel like, okay, maybe Felina changed a little bit too. Maybe Felina really realized that this guy really did care for her. So out she comes, you know, from out of nowhere, Felina has found me, kissing my cheek as she kneels by my side, cradled in two loving arms that I'll die for. One little kiss, and Felina, goodbye. And now we're at the end. It was worth it to him. That kiss was worth everything, and we felt every step of it. And if we'd asked the question, well, would it be worth it? To him, it would. And maybe to us, we go, yeah, maybe that would be worth it, because that was a major turn. And maybe Felina wasn't so bad after all. You know. And now we think, poor Felina, she's going to spend the rest of her life going, oh, my God, if only I hadn't danced with that guy in the beginning.
Right.
We could have everything could have been great.
It'd be a whole different timeline.
Yeah. So those Felinas of us out there hearing the song might go, uh-oh, I better change my ways.
It's really a perfectly told story. And in terms of the way, with just a little bit of time, he draws the entire scene, an economy of words that make you feel every detail.
Right.
That make you understand what its risk, what the cost is, why he's so driven to go back. And, I love the part at the end where he starts to fade. He says, the bullet hits me, and it's almost like I'm losing consciousness here, but I still have to get to Felina.
You know, exactly. Down the hill, my love is strong, and it pushes me onward, right? So it's like love trumps bullets, you know? I mean, he is going to get there no matter what, but because each thing he does is being driven forward by what he's feeling inside, and the songwriter tells us what he's feeling. The songwriter doesn't make us guess. We're not guessing, oh, I guess he's going to go forward because he really wants to find Felina. We're in his head. As he goes forward, hearing what he's feeling, hearing that he's understanding the risk, and watching him make sense of it and go, you know what? Yeah, this is worth it to me. I'm going to do it. Because that's the level story lives on. It's not the surface level of what the character does. It's the internal level of what it's costing the character to do it and how they're making sense of the world, because that's what we turn to story for. How are people making sense of the world? We understand the surface way people do it because that's what we do. You know, we get the party line. But what we really want to know is, well, what are you really thinking? What is it really costing you? What would it really be like, you know, feel like to do that? Because we all live by that, you know, that adage of, you know, never let them see you sweat. And stories are about sweating. Because you know what? When we're not letting them see us sweat, we're sweating. We're sweating a lot. And stories about what that feels like.
Now, here's another question. Mm-hmm. And this is one that maybe some of our listeners are asking themselves right now. Okay, all well and good, but why should I care? Why should I care about El Paso or about any of this? Mm-hmm. Well, that's a question we're going to answer. I'm going to answer it in just a moment. But first, let's tell you what our premium is today. Again, we're speaking with Lisa Cron, and Lisa Cron is author of the new book, Wired for Story. It's a book about how story works. But most importantly, Lisa's innovation is that story works in a way that you might say, follows the natural path of how the brain navigates the world. And when you understand this link between story, when you understand that story is actually the brain seeking meaning for itself, you can better master story. With a donation of $85 to WBAI, we will send you a copy of Wired for Story. If you send $100, we'll send you two CDs. One is 40 minutes and is a conversation with a conversation with Lisa Cron and myself talking about Story. What is Story? And it won't be me here on the radio and Lisa on the phone. It's crystal clear, digital stereo. Lisa was kind enough to come to WBAI and re-recorded this conversation. And then there's a second CD. It's even longer. It's 75 minutes, and it's 12 Paths to a Wired Brain. It talks about the 12 ways in which the brain seeks to be wired for Story. That's a two CD set for $100. Of course, you can send $165 and we'll send you the whole shebang, the book and the two CDs, and you'll be a Story expert. The number to call is 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Lisa, what is Wired for Story about?
Wired for Story is about basically two things. One, it is literally about how the brain is wired for story and what it is that we're looking for in every story that we hear. And then it's about how to take those principles and actualize them in your own stories so that you can write stories that are going to resonate with your readers or your listeners' brain so they'll really hear what you're saying.
And why did you write it?
I wrote it because I've spent my career working with writers, and I realized what I used to do is, for years and years and years, what I did was I read manuscripts and I read screenplays to analyze them to see did they or didn't they work. And very quickly I realized that while writers made kind of their own unique versions of certain mistakes, everyone seemed to be making the same mistake. And I began to look at what I was looking for in a story, and I realized that there were certain very specific things that made a story work and that made a story not work. And that was very different from what writers had been taught that it was. In other words, it didn't really have to do with lyrical language or great characters or vivid descriptions. It had to do with creating a sense of urgency that made me want to know what happens next. And I was able to isolate certain specific things that created that sense of urgency. And so my goal initially to write was to write a book that would really help writers understand what a story actually is so they could harness their fabulous writing to that and really hook readers. And then I've always been really interested in neuroscience, and I started noticing that everything I was reading about neuroscience also dealt with and did kind of validate what I had come to see as this is what the brain is wired to expect. In other words, it was the proof that, yeah, we are wired for story. And the brilliant thing, and then my big aha moment, was realizing why we're wired for story, why story has the effect on us that it does, and why that's never going to change.
You know, Lisa, there's a stigma around story. And in fact, I had to face it when putting together this premium. And here's what I mean. Typically here at WBAI, during a fund drive, our premiums, which are the gifts we give listeners who donate and support us, can be diet and health oriented. People readily understand the importance of diet or health. Or they can be DVDs that illuminate harmful government policies or controversies. And people get the value of that immediately. You know, you don't want your government taking advantage of you.
Right.
But today, I'm not doing either of those. My premium is story. Mm-hmm. I call story the most powerful method of communication between human beings on Earth. Now, by saying that, I realize that I've literally divided our audience. And by that, I mean this, that there are two groups listening to us speak right now. There's one group that totally, totally, completely gets this. And in a certain sense, they can't believe that we went there. They understand the value of story. They know that story and that people who master story communicate, persuade, and lead. A lot of these people are writers. A lot of them are novelists or journalists. But there are other people. There are business leaders. There are social activists. There are people who work for nonprofit organizations who increasingly understand that this is not just about writing stories, but this is about the ability to make your ideas felt by others. So they completely get this. They completely understand what we're doing and why we're doing it. Now, I just want to say, if you're one of those people, please call us at 212-209-209. 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Our premium is Wired for Story, the book by Lisa Cron, which talks about how story works and how story works in the brain, in the human mind, to feed the brain, to activate the brain, to give the brain what it wants from experience. With a donation of $100, we'll also send you copies of two conversations I had with Lisa Cron. One is called What is a Story? It's about 40 minutes, and Lisa and I kind of go through the question of what a story is and why a story is. And then the second CD, we really go into depth. It's called 12 Paths to a Wired Brain. That's 75 minutes long. And we go through each chapter of her book and talk about the brain science behind these facets of story and the way the brain interacts with story. You can get the whole set for $165, all three, the book and the two CDs. Now, like I said, you may be a person who understands this intrinsically. If you do already, if you're a writer, if you're a novelist, if you're a journalist, if you're someone who hopes to be one, if you're someone who's writing reports for school, if you want to get better grades and you want to tell better stories, 212-209-2950 is the number to call. 212-209-2950. Now, as I said earlier, I know I divided the audience because, as I was saying to my wife, there are really two people in the world. The people who get story and the people who don't get story. And the people, they're all the same in that they all use it, but one group knows that it works and how it works, and the other group doesn't. And they are usually the victims of the first group. That is to say, you either know how story works and you know how to use it, or you don't, and you are a victim of someone who does. It's almost like language, you know, in a way that you either speak the language well or you are victimized by people who do. So to the second group, if you're part of the second group that wonders, what is Harry Allen talking about? Why should I care about any of this? Like, why should I care about El Paso? You're the people I want to talk to today. I want to talk to you about story. And if you're part of that second group, you probably think that stories are innocuous. They're entertainment. They have nothing at all to do with the serious business of life. Now, again, that first group, call us, 212-209-2950. That's the number to call because you understand the power of story. You may be trying to work out stories. You may be a writer, a journalist, a novelist. You may be a minister or a rabbi. You understand the power of story. But if you're part of that second group, I want to talk to you and I want to tell you how stories work and why stories are not inconsequential. You may think that stories are nice, but they don't really have anything to do with life, bills, and the rent. So I want to tell you a story. In fact, I want to tell you a few stories. Imagine you're in your car and you're driving. You're late for an appointment, so you're speeding. Soon you see what every driver dreads behind you, and that's the flashing of red lights. So the cop pulls you over. And what does he ask you to do? Well, the first thing he's going to ask you to do is to see, you know, produce your license and registration. But after you do that, what is he going to do? He's going to ask you to tell him a story. He's going to say, "So, where were you going?" He's going to want to hear a story. And depending on what kind of story you tell at that point, he's either going to let you go with a warning or he's going to give you a ticket and say, "I'll see you in court." But it all depends at that moment on your story. Now, if you go to court, the judge is going to want you to tell him a story. He's going to want to know what you were doing to get in court that day. And this is the same whether you're there for a traffic ticket, not properly disposing of your trash, or for a double homicide. And when you think about it, when you look at the court environment, it's nothing but people telling each other stories. The guy makes a closing argument. It's a story. He puts you on the witness stand. You tell a story. It's all about story. If your kid gets home late, 3 hours late, in fact, past the curfew, you want them to tell you a story. You say, "Where were you?" Now, that story has got to make sense. If it doesn't make sense, they are going to be in trouble. If you go on a date, and it's a good one, your girlfriends are going to crowd around you and wait for you to tell them a story. What happened on your date? Even when you're on your date, you're going to ask your date to tell you a story. You're going to ask your date to tell me about yourself. If they tell you about themselves, but the story doesn't line up, or if it has unusual gaps in it, You may